General Government for the purpose of a public hearing on Senate Bill 5542, and welcome the Department of Revenue to our committee.
Well, just in time.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Did you open already?
Yes, I did, sir.
Wonderful. Thank you. Good morning. I beg your pardon. I stampede to apologize.
If I may, Mr. Chair, please briefly. The Department of Revenue has 9 budgetary programs. It's principally general funded. About 80%, 6% of its budget request is general fund. It comes forward with a request that doesn't have a lot of new stuff in it. It really, the governor's balanced budget pretty much restored the reductions that were made in the special sessions. It did have some budget notes from the 2001 session, encouraging them to host their web-based internet information services with the Department of Administrative Services, also to report to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology on backup services at the Burns Archive Center. Also, the department was encouraged to work with licensing agencies to ensure that out-of-state businesses are paying their appropriate taxes, and report to the emergency board and a couple of things, the status of property tax appeals, and also the results and efforts of the newly established tobacco tax compliance that was a joint effort. The compliance efforts were jointly between the Department of Justice, State Police, and the Department of Revenue. They had no other audits by Secretary of State that showed any unusual things. They're part of the state's annual comprehensive annual financial report in that audit. And that's about my wrap-up. You have our analysis. And,
thank you. Are there questions for Dallas as we get ready to start in? Again, thank you very much for your patience as I finished up a little late on the folks up in Kearney County. Director Archenko, you know what the piggy bank is for.
Yes, sir.
And so we're going to go ahead and go right into the Oregon Department of Revenue. Let's see, do you want to start with Darren?
Maybe good, that way you can give the overview. And
that'd be great. Darren, why don't you give us a start up here, please?
Sure, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Darren Hill from Budget and Management. I'd like to start by saying this is my one and only budget assignment, so if I have any faux pas, please forgive me up front, okay? The first page of my handout goes through, and it shows the actuals, the close of session. As you can see, it's about the governor's budget is about a 10.7% increase in general fund from the close of session budget, about 12% through fifth special session. I would like to note that during the current session, there was about a $1.9 million restoration to the department to help offset the cuts taken as part of the fifth special session. Total budget is about 11% increase over close of session. If you go to the next slide, as Dallas said, it's about an 86% general fund budget. There's about 14% other funds and a tiny 0.1% of other funds non-limited. On the fourth slide, as I said, it's about 11% increase from the 2001-2003 legislatively approved budget through the fifth special session. However, if you add back the actions, the $1.9 million, it makes it about a 9.5% increase. Major changes approved through the special sessions. In the third special session, there was a $1 million reduction taken as part of the salary funding reductions. And as mentioned before, as part of House Bill 5100, in the fifth special session, there was a $4 million reduction. The general fund collections would have suffered about a $23 million loss had those reductions stayed in place. We have two policy packages in the governor's budget. One is a restoration and a slight enhancement of the tobacco task force. And we have a slight enhancement of the Treasury offset program. It should be noted that both of those policy packages will actually increase the general fund. The other programs, as Dallas said, are basically back to the level of services that are currently approved. On the next slide, we go through the several divisions. The largest one being personal tax and compliance. This is their enforcement collection of the personal income tax. Information processing, and the agency did a reorganization in the beginning of the current biennium, and they moved out their IT, some of their finance, and the process, and some of their HR and the processing center is all now under information processing. The administrative services is the group that they moved all of those, or several of those functions out of.
So information processes now includes information technology and human resources?
Yes. And finance also.
Thank you.
Okay. Some of the other two larger programs are your property tax, which includes some mapping, some industrial valuations, and the county admin of the property tax laws. The business group is the corporate tax. They do some collection of delinquent business taxes, and debts owed to agencies are also in that program.
And the business portion of 15.5%?
Yes. Okay. On the next slide, we break down the budget categories. As you would expect, they are 71% is personal services. The vast majority is people. There is a 20% or so of services and supplies and about 10% in special payments. Department does a lot of shifting of revenues and those types of things, and so that's where some of those special payments come in.
What type specific is that? Tobacco? Is that what that is?
They have several different revenues. There's a general fund that goes in and out and collections and those kinds of things.
Okay.
But yes, the tobacco is definitely a piece of that. On slide 7, we kind of run down the budget, and there's about $138 million of total funds in the adopted budget. The approved budget, that we did have one emergency board action included for about $926,000 for the processing of kicker checks associated with the prior biennium. There has been roll-up of position actions and compensation changes, as there would be in any agency. There has been an adjustment for mass transit taxes, unemployment assessments, differentials, which is a reduction of $62,542 of total funds. The budget has also been adjusted for phased-in and phased-out programs. And one that probably should be noted is the change in the generally accepted accounting practice rules, which now states that merchant fees and credit card costs must be recorded as expenditures. Previously, they had been a reduction of revenue. It is a net zero to the state because we will now show more revenue coming in with associated expenditures. But we have to now put those expenditures on the books. There was about a $2.5 million increase for standard inflation and state government service charges. We had one technical adjustment. The department was directed to contract with the Department of Administrative Services for centralized mail services. As you can see, that shifted costs from personal services to services and supplies and resulted in an $11,000 reduction to the general fund budget. On slide 9, there were some special session actions taken in the third special session, a reduction of $131,000 total fund, about $130,000 general fund, to take care of the elimination of one vacant position and the reduction of the 3% cost of living adjustment for salary ranges 38 and above. The department had originally planned on purchasing a new AS400 mini computer. As part of reductions, it has been decided that the agency will lease that instead of purchasing. There is still a $240,000 lease costs included in their budget, but that is down substantially from the $1.5 million to purchase the new computer. Those lease payments will cover the last 6 months of the 2003-05 biennium. As part of the governor's budget, we originally had a package that reduced their budget by $15.3 million and reduced 126 positions to show the roll-up costs associated with House Bill 5100. In the governor's budget, given that that $15 million reduction would have cost the state about $70 million in general fund, we restored back $14.3 million in 119 positions. The difference between the 15 and the 14 number was basically some efficiencies that the agency had gained using technology and other ideas they had implemented. So the general fund will still, the collection should be the same for about $1 million less in cost. As I mentioned before on the last slide, there are two policy packages included in this budget. The first is the Treasury Offset Program for about $250,000. What this allows the state to do is offset state tax liabilities against federal tax refunds. This has been a successful program that's been implemented. Basically, these will help cover the costs of printing items and for some offset fees. As you can see, it's a net increase of $2.7 million to the general fund. The other package is the Tobacco Task Force, $250,000 general fund. It continues the efforts of the Tobacco Tax Compliance Task Force. There were two revenue agents that were limited duration. It would continue both of those positions. They are there's also the inclusion of another tax auditor, too, which is the other tobacco portion of the Tobacco Tax Compliance Task Force. And I'm sure the agency will talk to you about the success of that program. That package should also net us a net increase of about $2.2 million general fund.
Okay. Other questions of Mr. Bell? Representative Johnson is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to make sure that I understood you, back on the page where you were discussing what all occurred in the administrative services, I thought I heard you say that the agency provided some debt collection services to other agencies.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, that is correct.
I'm in Senator Winter's favorite territory, but I'm just curious if you could characterize the nature of that, either you or Ms. Harshenko.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Elizabeth Harshenko, Director of your Department of Revenue. Representative Johnson, we have an other agency collections program where we serve about 70 state agencies that assign debt to us. We can use either our own internal income tax refund offset program to collect payments for those debts, or a full range of collection services at the option of the client agency. We also collect court fines for the courts, and we have some slides in the presentation that will show you in a little more detail what that group does.
Good. When we get there, would you flag that, because I'm interested in knowing more detail about that. Senator Winters has made me a convert to more aggressive collection procedures, and I'd like to touch on that.
I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you, Representative Johnson.
Okay, further questions, Mr. Hill? All right, let's go ahead with Director Archenko. And if you would, please, Director, if you're referring to the information within the book, try and steer us to where that might be as we go along.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be working primarily from the materials that we distributed to you in the resource binder. We put some pages in the front today. That is our presentation material that's extracted from the more detailed resource materials that I distributed to you last week. I try not to go to the number sheets.
Okay.
If you do have questions about specific numbers, I've got the resources to address them.
Just advise us from time to time which page you're on.
I will, so sir. Thank you. I apologize for my voice. I was coming down with a cold last week. It has arrived.
You've been like this ever since you got back from China. Are you okay?
I didn't go to China. The governor went to China. And I haven't seen him since he got back. So I think it's a combination of allergies and the bug that's been going around lately. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what we'd like to do is give you a two-part presentation about our budget. First, I will give you a high-level overview about what we do, why we do it, and why we do it the way we do it, which I think is as important as the first two. We'll talk about how we use our budget resources, our past performance, and our goals for the future. And then we'll move into more depth on our three major program areas, which are the income taxes, the tobacco taxes, and the property tax system. I'm going to try to move as expeditiously through this as I can. I know how precious time is for all of you. I will let you know what page I'm on so that we can stay together. And I'd like to introduce Jim Maneri, the deputy for the Department of Revenue, and we're going to switch back and forth and keep this moving for you. So moving to page 3 of the presentation materials, the mission of the department is to make tax systems work to fund the public services that preserve and enhance the quality of life for citizens, and we put the emphasis on making tax systems work. And what you'll hear through the course of our conversation with you today and tomorrow is how we do that and how we try to use technology and innovation in order to do that the best way that we possibly can. On page 4, we set forth the values of the department. This is why we do things the way we do them. We have learned over many, many years, and these values came with the agency when I got there, and I certainly hope that they will stay with the agency when I leave. We know that the public's confidence in our management of tax programs is directly related to their appreciation for the integrity and honesty that we bring to the work that we do. So highly ethical conduct is our top priority.
Elizabeth, at the department's level, I know there's a lot of penalties that come with disclosure of federal tax information, including $10,000 fines and those kinds of things. Are those included for the state as well? Do we have the same kinds of fines for disclosure of individuals' personal income tax information?
Mr. Chair, Oregon state law creates a Class C felony for unauthorized disclosure of any tax information that we have in our possession. And so the federal penalties would apply if we have unauthorized disclosure of federal tax information, and then our own state criminal penalties would apply to us if we have an unauthorized disclosure of any information.
Are you saying they're greater, or as a Class C felony, that's greater than the federal fines and penalties?
Mr. Chair, I don't know what the maximum penalty is for a Class C felony. I do know that we instruct our staff that they are subject to criminal prosecution and the loss of their jobs if they disclose information that they shouldn't, and so we don't.
Okay.
5 years in jail and a $100,000 fine, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Thank you.
The next value that we have listed is operational excellence, and this is why I said that the part of the mission statement that's important to us is making tax systems work. We try to make the systems work better and make complying with our tax laws simpler, faster, and cheaper for Oregonians. And usually when we're able to do that, we make administration simpler, faster, and cheaper for ourselves. We use a broad base of resources, our own employees, other taxing entities, and taxpayers' input in order to improve our systems. Another one of our values is fiscal responsibility. It's directly related to the ethical conduct value. We try to manage our resources in as prudently as we possibly can. We have to process and account for literally billions of dollars every biennium, and so we do that as carefully as we can. And we are also responsible for assuring that local governments are engaging in their own budget processes appropriately in our supervision of the property tax system. And finally, last but certainly not least, it's very important to us that we interact in a fair and responsible and respectful way with everyone with whom we work, whether it's our coworkers, taxpayers, or any of our external partners. We value and appreciate the contributions of all of our people, and I will be talking about those examples of those things as they come up during the presentation. And we believe that excellent service enhances our working relationships with everyone. So those are the values that flow through how we do our work. every day. Page 5. We thought that we would like to give you a chronology of the when programs that we administer were created and when we received them for administration. And even before the state became a state, there was a property tax program to help fund the territorial government. The State Tax Commission, which was the predecessor to the Department of Revenue, was created in 1909 and started out with administration, supervision of the property tax system, and determination of values of utilities, which then was probably railroads and telegraphs. In 1929 and 1930, the income taxes came in, and I would note for historical interest that they were characterized as property tax relief acts.
That was the Property Tax Relief Act of 1930, I think.
Right.
I think Governor Attia calls it. Representative Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, in 1844, when Representative Butler was knee-high.
only doing 40s, not doing 1040s at that point.
What was the primary purpose of the property tax at that point in time?
Mr. Chair,
just for historical purposes.
The territorial government and local communities needed taxes to probably fund schools.
You think so?
I think so. That was probably it. And I will defer to my deputy who's read through the history. So is there anything
Well, thank you.
To
Mr.
Add?
Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jim Mary, the deputy. Schools were a primary source.
And you'll see addition of a number of other tax programs, amusement devices, forest products. We picked up a valuation of some industrial properties for the county tax assessors in the mid-50s. The severance tax, which is Eastern Oregon, a tax on the harvesting of trees, came in 1961. The cigarette tax in 1965. In 1970, we were statutorily directed by the legislature to create a collections unit to assist other agencies in collecting their debts. We also, in 70 and 71, contracted with Lane Transit District and TriMet to collect their transit taxes. They have a payroll-based tax and a self-employment tax, which track very closely with our withholding program and our estimated tax program. In the early 70s, when inflation was high and the growth in value of homes was very fast, there was a homeowner and renter relief program that was put in place by the legislature that actually was a payment program that helped people pay some of their property taxes. That was repealed in the 80s, but the last vestiges of it are the Elderly Rental Assistance Program, which you'll see listed under 1991. Through the rest of the years, we've picked up administration of the Senior Deferral Program, which includes not only deferral of property tax, but also special assessments, and was expanded to cover people who are disabled in the 2001 legislative session. In 1989, we expanded the amount of industrial property that we value. Today, we're responsible to value all industrial property in the state that has a value of $1 million or more. The initial assignment in the 50s was $5 million or more. Tobacco products tax, which is the non-cigarette tobacco products, was enacted by the legislature in 1985, and we've picked up several other smaller programs since. In 1999, the legislature authorized a development of a statewide digital mapping program that's funded by a special fee that's attached to recording fees at the local level, and we partner with the counties, other state agencies, and the federal government in this mapping program. So that gives you just a little bit of a flavor for the kinds of programs we're responsible for and when we got them. Oh, by the way, in 1969, the Tax Commission was officially renamed the Department of Revenue and went from a 3-member commission to a director form of government organization. Turning to page 6, we're going to use this format of the arrow showing the revenue flow through our activities for most of our programs. You'll see that the big blocks of our work for the personal and corporate income taxes include processing and accounting for processing the returns, accounting for the payments, banking payments, auditing the returns that come in, collecting any past due accounts or any accounts that we set up through audit and assessment of additional tax or identification of people who should be filing and haven't. And our taxpayer assistance function, which includes forms, publications, answering questions through both the phone and the internet, and by and correspondence. Excuse me. The estimated, as of the March forecast, the estimated amount of general fund revenue that we will have passed through our systems during the next 2 years is about $9.8 billion, and that's about 96% of the state's general fund. Now, when Darren went through his materials for you, he showed you our administrative organization chart, and that was page 5 of his handout. The programs that we administer flow across most of our divisions. So personal tax and compliance and the information processing division both have, actually, and the business division all have their hands on the personal income tax program through, in personal tax and compliance, the auditing and the collecting takes place and the program policy is developed. In the business division, we work with employers on the withholding program. And in the information processing division is our center, our processing center, where all the returns and payments come through and are accounted for, and payments bank, as well as computer services, which supports all of those programs, and finance, which accounts for those dollars that come through. We collect, let's see, the department is the pipeline for the resources that finance much of state government, and clearly almost all of the discretionary funds that the legislature has to spend. We collect all the state taxes, all the major state taxes, except for fuel and gas taxes, alcohol taxes, and license fees. And we've tried to include for you the number of full-time equivalent positions that are devoted to activities related to administration of the personal income and corporation taxes and that administrative cost. It does not match up with Darren's pie chart, because this is our organizational structure, and what we've tried to show you is the resources we devote to program in our document. Moving to page 7, for those of you who have been around the legislature for a while, this should look familiar. We used to do a dollar bill poster and make that available to you. We changed it to a pie chart, but fundamentally what we tell our people is this is why you're doing the work you're doing, is to fund education, public safety, human services, and other important services that state government and local government provide.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Johnson.
Can I put a pitch in for the dollar bill?
Sure.
That was one of the first charts that I saw in looking at any of the budgets as a freshman, and it had a kind of catchy effect, more so than I think your sort of ersatz pie chart, but at least somebody likes the dollar bill.
Well, thank you, Representative Johnson, for that feedback, because we sort of struggled with whether the dollar bill really carried the information well.
12 cents is better than 12%. let's see. Just one question on page 6. 96% of the state's general fund. I'm assuming the majority of that other 4% is probably the monies that are collected by the ULCC.
Mr. Chair, I think it's mostly lottery dollars.
Mostly lottery. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I think you're correct. To pure state general fund, it would be the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. The
okay.
lottery funds are actually
separated
from the general fund.
From
okay.
general fund. So the majority of that is ULCC then?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Darren.
Sure.
Okay, moving to page 8. This is the same type of presentation on our property tax system. The property tax, as you know, is the primary source of revenue for local government. It generates about $6.7 billion in a two-year period. And the dollars go to schools, cities, counties, special districts, and urban renewal. Thank you, Dale. The functions that the department performs include utility and transportation valuation, and that covers now airlines, railroads, energy companies, and telecommunications. We, as I told you, are responsible for valuing all industrial property that's worth $1 million or more. We support the mapping function, which is one of the base functions in the system altogether. We are contract mapping services for 15 counties, provide statewide standards for all counties, and work with all the counties, again, on trying to develop a digital map base for the property taxes.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know why I had not registered with me that you did this level of mapping, and I think of my own, one of my poor little counties struggling with trying to put together a sophisticated enough mapping system. Is there any way that your services could be available in even a more comprehensive way to the counties? I'm thinking that yours must be sophisticated enough to rely on GIS and all of the fancy cartography available to a major state agency. You're smiling. Maybe that's a false assumption.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, we are beginning to integrate GIS into our mapping, but we do have digital capacity right now, and we provide support to the counties on a 50-50 cost share. Part of our general fund resources are used to supplement resources that the county has if the county wants to contract with us. And then in our digital mapping program, we actually have a grant program, and the counties apply for grants to help fund movement toward the digital mapping system. And so your county participates in a region, and there are dollars available regionally as well as grant dollars available from directly from the department for moving toward the digital mapping system. And Jim is the real expert on that. And
that's the detail I need to know, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I'm just worried about duplication, as it seems to me that if the state made an investment in one repository for really expert cartography, why
Johnson,
replicate that?
This is that's an excellent question and an excellent discussion, because we've talked about that before. Counties start to invest some money in it. We've got environmental concerns and organizations that have money invested in other mapping throughout the state, many agencies. And I think in the past we've expressed some concern about that. Jim has been very willing to bring all of the various folks to the table to utilize their services. Jim, you do have a map that shows county by county all of those counties who subscribe to your system. Is it in the book?
For the record, Jim Maneri, yes, sir.
Okay.
I'll cover that a little later on the progress of that.
Great.
Please.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I would mention one last thing. The state government is trying hard to coordinate mapping, our GIS development specifically, and there is an Oregon Geographic Information Council that the department belongs to that's facilitated by the Department of Administrative Services. So natural resource agencies and other agencies that are interested in using the geographic information system to plan and to track where they need to be attending to issues. We are trying to coordinate that, and there is a coordinator within Department of Administrative Services we work closely with, and who also we have a liaison from them with our Oregon mapping, the digital mapping program as well. the last block of work that we do in the department is oversight. It's actually more support. I guess the emphasis would be on support of county administration of the property tax system, because the day-to-day administration does happen in the counties, in the assessor's office and the tax collector's office. And so our role is to support their efforts so that we have a uniform system across the state, which is a constitutional requirement. We support them with training, policy development, and answers to a lot of questions to help them as they work through their administrative issues. The department's full-time equivalent positions that are devoted to our part of the system is 139.19 projected for the next biennium, and our administrative cost is projected to be $24.4 million. On page 9, we have a similar chart concerning the services that are paid for with the property tax dollars. And I think it's important to remember that the $3 billion in the property tax system that supports schools and community colleges are dollars that the legislature doesn't have to come up with. So we realize that and try to work very closely with the counties to make sure that all the value that should be on the roll is on the roll, so that those resources are available to all the local units. The other thing I would point out is that some special districts, hospital districts, road districts, and fire districts, depend almost 100% on property tax for their operating resources. Moving to page 10, the cigarette and other tobacco taxes are our other really big block of work that we do. The money that's going to come in the next biennium, this reflects the rate increase that was enacted in September by the voters. The largest portion of that money goes to support the health plan. $111 million goes into the general fund. There's revenue sharing with cities and counties and public transit, and there's some funds that also go into a tobacco usage reduction account. It's administered by the state. Revenues, full-time equivalent positions, we have nine staff members or nine positions that are supporting the cigarette and other tobacco tax programs in partnership with the state police and the Department of Justice. Our own administrative cost is $2.5 million. On page 11, we've listed our other programs that we administer and where the resources that are come through us go, what kinds of functions that they support. The amusement device tax, we work in partnership with the lottery because that tax is actually on the video lottery games.
It's not on the pinball machines.
Mr. Chair, I think it's only on video lottery games now. I think the pinball machines and the amusement rides and other things were taken out of the law.
Okay. I mean, well, I'll get your attention here. I'm just going to jump back to slide 8 on property taxes. Mm-hmm. Of the total property taxes that are collected are $6.7 billion total statewide.
For 2 years, yes.
For 2 years. $3 billion of that $6.7 billion goes to schools?
Schools and community colleges. Oh, and probably education service districts if they have levy authority.
And so what we're saying is that education, even though it's mandated to be limited to a half, one-half, 1% of the 1.5% limitation, actually accounts for nearly 50%. Something just short of 50% of the total amounts collected.
Mr. Chair, in some areas, the cap isn't reached by local governments. So, for example, in unincorporated areas of a county, the other government limit might not be reached. And so
it obviously isn't being reached, or else that $3 billion, if it was truly the half percent limit, then the total would be $9 billion if everyone was in compression or max at that particular point. So, but that would be that schools, ESDs, and community colleges are receiving just, I guess you could take 3 on 6-7, which would be 45% of the total property tax collected goes into education. Is that right? I mean, that's approximately what we're saying here.
That's our best estimate for the next 2 year period. It'll be about $3 billion, which will include operations as well as bonding.
Okay. And the bonding amounts are included in that too, which would be outside of the half percent limitation.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
All right. So that includes, and the 6.7 includes bonding collections as well.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The 6.7 is all property tax dollars, undifferentiated.
Senator Devlin.
Thank you. I have a general question about property taxes and Measure 4750 in the bill that was passed while 50 was being passed by the voters in terms of we made an adjustment to Measure 50, right, as it was being voted on. Because of the limitations in Measure 5, Measure 50, and, of course, now in the Constitution, and we're limited to $5 of real market value versus assessed value and $10 real market value versus assessed value. Has it created a significant workload increase in terms of counties because we're now having to value properties? I mean, we're having to track each property individually in terms of what the real market value is versus their assessed value. Have we seen a marked increase in workload at the county level? I know most states actually have a rate-based system, but they may not have one this complex.
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, you're correct. The overlay of Measure 5 on our system and then Measure 50 on our system has created a lot of complexity at the local level in terms of the record keeping that has to be done. You mentioned the assessors need to keep track of real market value. They also need to keep track of assessed value, which often is different. They need to keep track of the Measure 50 limit, which is the maximum value at which any property can be assessed, and determine whether real market value is above or below that limit. If property is specially assessed for a special purpose like farm or forest, there's a specially assessed calculation that has to be done, and specially assessed real market or specially assessed value and assessment limits and Measure 50 limits. So there is a lot more complexity at the local level in terms of administration. And then the Measure 5 limit has to be calculated, as you said, on each property, property by property. How much tax is being assessed against this particular property, and does it exceed either of those two limits for schools or general government?
Mr. Chairman, the reason I ask the question is because we were trying to get some answers in another committee on some of this, and it's not as easy as it at first would seem to the average citizen to determine what the amount left under those limits is in each particular jurisdiction or each particular taxing district, because it's an extensive amount of work to try to determine what's left in that gap.
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, both the Legislative Revenue Office and our office have more detail on what those challenges are, and I'd like to introduce my property tax administrator, Randy Evers, and if you have any questions, I'm sure Randy can help you with that.
Okay. Thank you.
Let me just ask a question while we're still there. The current RMV, statewide real market value,
I don't have that right now. We can get it for you.
Okay. And then a breakdown. I would like to have a breakdown of the $6.7 million. How much of that includes bond collections as well as property taxes? That may be instructive. And it sounds like Senator Devlin may have been working on that in the revenue office, a revenue committee hearing in that vein, I think that would be important information for us.
Okay, Mr. Chair, we will get that information and bring it for you tomorrow.
That'd be fine. Just refer us back to page 8 when you deliver.
Okay, I think I had moved to page 12, which are the last of the other tax programs that we collect. Timber taxes include severance taxes, which are assessed when timber is cut, and forest products harvest tax, which is also assessed when timber is cut. Those are distributed by formula to a wide variety of sources. The general fund is actually reimbursed for the cost of administration. And then schools, county, cities, special districts, and community colleges receive a substantial portion based upon where the timber has been harvested. And then the forest products harvest tax supports, I believe, some programs within the Department of Forestry and at Oregon State. Then we also collect, with the assistance of telecommunications carriers, money that funds the 911 emergency telephone system. page 13, our other agency program collects about, let's see, $54 million, I think, is just the state agency number. There's another substantial amount that goes into we've got court fines and assessments separately stated. The other agency collections program, as I said, offers services to all state agencies for any liquidated debt that they would like to have us collect, and we use our state income tax offset, refund offset, as well as collection services.
President Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions about two specific items in here. Going back to page 12, the 911 system money with the $56 million. Is this number reflective of special session attempts to steal this money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I think this is simply our projection of the amount of revenue that will come in through that tax program, not where it will go.
Okay. And then on the criminal fines and assessments, I understand anecdotally, and that's I'm asking you to provide me some additional information, that that amount is falling precipitously, the total amount collected from the court, I said criminal court fines and assessments. Could you comment on that or help me understand?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I'd like to ask permission to go back and get a little more detail for you on this.
Could you please?
We would want to look back and see what we've had come through in 0103 and 9901 to see whether it has been dropping. We recently had an audit by the Secretary of State of the court system and our work related to making sure that those fines and assessments are being reported properly by the courts and remitted. And there were some issues for the smaller courts, the municipal courts and the justice courts out in the counties. The circuit courts have a good system, but some of the smaller courts had some compliance problems. So we'll go back and look and see whether there's been any serious reduction in those dollar flows and get that back to you tomorrow.
One other thing, Mr. Chair, if it would be possible, and I don't want you to do exhaustive research, but just a comment from the department. Were the courts not to be fully funded and unable to perform at their optimum number of days open, what effect that might have on this account in terms of your projections for a decline if fewer cases are being heard and the courts aren't available?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I don't know whether we'd have the resources to be able to, or the knowledge base to be able to estimate what the fall off might be, because it would depend on what kinds of cases the courts would stop hearing or would delay hearing.
Are these coming, these revenue forecasts, are those coming from the revenue office?
I'll have to find out where the projections come
okay.
from.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Winters.
Since we're on collection services.
Please.
Thank you, Representative Johnson.
Chair, Senator Winters, we've got several questions regarding collections.
Just a couple. As you're compiling the information for Representative Johnson, would you include in that under the other agency collections what that history has been, particularly when we passed the legislation in 99 and 01 to try to speed up collections? And I'm curious because unless the child support is in other agencies, it doesn't show here, and where it is in the mix and whether that collection is, whether we're getting more aggressive in collecting those dollars.
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, for the child support division, the only service they ask us to use for them is the income tax refund offset, and they have collection resources of their own, I understand, that they use. We will go into some detail in our drill down later on in the presentation on where our history has been in terms of collection services. My memory is that our other agency collections program has had increasing collections over the years that I've been in the agency. When we have some material later on.
It would also be helpful as to the timeline that agencies are using before they turn over the collections to you. One of the concerns, as you know, that I have is that sometimes they wait so long before they have turned over the collections either to you or to a private collection agency that it takes a lot more work in order to collect the dollars. So it would be helpful if you had some information as to what the timelines are before the agency is actually turned over and asked for your assistance.
Okay. I'll see if we have that information. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Okay. And then page 14, we do administer two assistance programs. The legislature appropriates funds each year for us to distribute to low-income elderly renters. Our projected in the budget this biennium is $9.3 million, which would be divided between the two fiscal years. The checks go out in the fall, there are income levels that people have to really be pretty low income to be eligible for this assistance. And then senior and disabled deferral programs pay property taxes. There's actually one more program in here, and that is there is a funded property tax exemption for nonprofit homes for the elderly. And part of the that's under elderly rental assistance, I'm sorry. The nonprofit homes for the elderly are exempt from property tax, and a portion of the $9.3 million that that were appropriated is used to pay the counties the property taxes that they are foregoing because of that property tax exemption. Then senior and disabled deferral is, as I said before, an opportunity for people who are disabled or if they're senior citizens and below a certain income level to have the state pay their property taxes or their any special assessments for like sidewalks or sewers or streetlights. And that becomes a lien against the property and it accrues interest. And then when they sell the home or if they die and the property is transferred, then the taxes are repaid with interest. That is a self-funded program now that doesn't require any appropriation by the legislature. The repayments that are coming in are adequate to pay the taxes that we have to pay each year. And then I mentioned before we collect taxes on behalf of TriMet and the Lane Transit District. They piggyback on our withholding and estimated tax programs, and we do recover our cost of administration from the revenues that come in.
Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a question about we have no jurisdictions that are currently doing this, but we may have some that attempt to do it in the future. All cities in Oregon are now home rule and actually have the authority to impose a local income tax. If they imposed it, would you administer it for a fee, or would it have to be administered at the local level?
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, yes and yes. We've had conversations with a number of local jurisdictions over the last several years, about 3 years, about administration of local income taxes. We've talked to Lane County. We've talked to the City of Salem a couple of different times. We've had inquiries from Benton County and the City of Corvallis and, of course, an inquiry from Multnomah County. We have the authority to administer local income taxes under contract with local units of government. There are certain challenges to administering local income taxes that are grounded in the details of the program, and we have no extra resource in order to administer local income taxes. And we, in fact, had to decline to administer Multnomah County's because the timeline was so short for when they wanted to have dollars in the door that we would have had to put the state personal income tax behind Multnomah County's income tax into order of priority, and I didn't feel that that was appropriate for us to do given the state's fiscal condition. But we are we're going to have to go back and really think about this because local units are looking at the fact that the property tax is inadequate, state revenue sharing is dropping, and resource demands aren't going, or demands for service aren't going away. So we've got a group that's working on if the department was able to administer local income taxes, what they would have to look like in order for us to be able to do it. The reason that TriMet and the Lane Transit taxes work so well for us is that they are molded to our withholding program and our estimated tax program. And the employers who remit payroll taxes, withholding for their employees and unemployment insurance and workers' comp assessments, can remit, if they are doing business in the jurisdictions of either of these transit districts, can remit their transit taxes right at the same time on the same form and writing the same check. So it's a very, very tightly paralleled program and doesn't require a lot of additional resource on our part to administer. Income taxes, as you know, have a lot of variables in them. Rates, who are the taxpayers, what is in the base that is subject to tax, and so that makes administering income taxes a little more problematic. For us, as we think about it, because we're in the business of administering a really big system, 1.5 million returns a year just in the personal income tax program, we would need to be able to say to local units, if you're willing to have your tax meet these criteria, then we would be able to administer it. But if you need it to be something significantly different, you're going to have to think about administering it yourself. So we recognize this is something that cities and counties are looking at, and that we are going to have to be prepared to respond and explain to them what we can and can't do consistent with our administration of the state's personal income tax.
Thank you.
Okay. Sorry.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to let my voice rest and ask Jim to take you through the next part of the presentation.
Thank you. For the record, Jim Mary, Chairman of the Committee. Unfortunately, Elizabeth will get a long rest. This is a short piece before she's back up on the tax. The next few pages, I just want to talk a little about, really want to talk about productivity, our agency, how we leverage our budget. We do a lot with changing our skill mix around to try to maximize the outputs. We redesign processes, try to make them more efficient and particularly match with new technologies, and then we automate. For the 2001-2003 budget, we gave up 50 positions up front based on productivity increases. This time around, we gave up 7 positions up front because of productivity increases. Going to page 16, this is just a short history, but over since 93, we basically, our skill mix has changed, or we've reduced clerical support, we've reduced managers, and those resources then have been shifted more to the front line with auditors, revenue agents, and information technology support staff for our automation systems. Well, span of control has increased from 10 to 1 to 12 to 1 during that period. So we do try to mix our skill mix around to maximize things. On page 17, you're going to see this chart again for a different one, but right now I'd like to just say that in our automation programs, the graphs you see there are pretty typical of how we see automation boosting our productivity, and that is the integrated tax accounting system came in about 93, and that was we had spent a long time on that, but that basically, again, as it suggests, integrated all of our accounting, billing systems for all of our programs, and then following it, we had an automation system come up on collecting and then business information. Once we got those programs in and employees used to it, everything settled down, we saw a dramatic increase in the productivity of our people because of that. They had a lot more information available, a lot faster. So you have a revenue agent trying to collect, they have a lot more information on the screen while they're talking to a taxpayer than they did before. They can close transactions a lot faster and reconcile problems.
Jim, this may be asking a question which is apples and oranges, but do we know how this compares nationwide, and then do we know how much our investment in technology as a Department of Revenue compares nationwide with other states' investments into technology based upon the complexity of our plan?
Mr. Chair, I'd have to check on that to see if they keep the similar statistics. I'll see if they have that.
Please. Thank you.
We've seen that. We're working on programs now to keep increasing it. The last one you see there, which is a projection, is the new federal offset program. Treasury offset program is what they call it. Again, we gave up 3 positions because of that. Just the technology that's been put in, and it takes very little staff. It's mostly automation, and we're going to be bringing in more revenue by offsetting federal income tax refunds for our debt. And on page 18, another way of looking at this is even though we've had workload increases over the years, our staffing level has been fairly flat. To the extent, again, that and during that period, the legislature has added a number of positions to our agency to generate more revenue, but because of the positions we've been able to give up, we've stayed pretty flat in terms of our resource. So that sort of is, at this point, is an overview. It's a very strong value in our agency, and we're continuing it in terms of projects coming up. I'll go into some detail later on some of the projects we see coming up in Bill 305. Information technology, page 20. For those of you that watch Star Wars, it reminds me of the fanatic for the Death Star for Psy. But,
you shouldn't use that analogy with the Department of Revenue.
I know.
Oh,
I
should, no.
I know I shouldn't, but I just have to. We basically, in terms of the hardware systems, there's really three parts to that. One is our IBM AS400 machine. That's the big driver. But we also have servers, and then we have the desktop applications at the personal computer level. That's sort of the schematic of it. Let me say, then moving over to 21, we've changed our structure for managing information technologies, and we've loaded it on the front end with a lot of upper level management. So the Information Technology Executive Council is the top group, which is the deputy director and the division administrators. With some support, they basically are responsible for the long-term strategy of our resources in this area. They're responsible for our relationships externally in terms of our information technology. That would be with the Department of Administrative Services and any other outside agency or group we're working with in terms of resources. We also have a management council is our technical managers. And they do a lot of the work. They manage all the technical resources. They do a lot of work coordinating all of these systems to make sure that they integrate well and flow well. And we have a business council. Mainly it's made up of our program managers. Those would be the managers that report directly to the division administrators. They're sort of in the middle of all the program and the technical. And they do a lot of the resource prioritization. When we have a problem over, if we have to put a system up front, if the legislature, say, gives us a program and it requires IT, it requires these resources, this is the group that will sort of resort the priorities we have at the time to fit that in, to make sure that we can get it done. We also have a hardware-software committee, and we mention that because for instance, when we purchase personal computers, we do it centrally in the agency. We used to have where the programs bought their own. We now do it centrally, and this group determines our needs in terms of the capacity of the personal computers and uniform software that will run on them so that our programs can talk to each other and are using common standards. They also, when
your main server is an AS400, is that right?
Yes, sir.
And you have how many of those?
We have one.
One?
Large one.
And we've got, we're leasing in this next budget year another one?
No, Mr. Chair, we freed up some money by switching. We usually would have to upgrade that machine about every 4 years at a price. Today's prices would be about $1.5 million. We found out that you can lease through IBM these machines, so we're going to switch to a lease. In the last part of 0305, that's about when we would be buying. So instead of spending $1.5 million to buy a new machine, we're going to begin leasing with IBM. So, and that's why in the 0305 budget period, instead of spending $1.5 million, it would only be about $250,000.
And that $250,000 isn't for the full 0305 by any means.
No, it would not be. It would only be for the last 6 months. The lease looks, in terms of how we've purchased over time, the lease looks, from a business viewpoint, looks more attractive to us also in terms of maintaining services with IBM.
The machine that we own then gets transferred out in the process somewhere in that lease. They assume the operation, or they take over the old machine as part of the lease arrangement. I assume several people are shaking their heads on it. That's probably right.
It's probably right, Mr. Chair. Normally, when we buy, it's a trade-in. So actually, I'm not sure how it would work on the lease part.
But over the long run, as opposed to purchasing a new machine every 2 years or every 4 years, then the lease will be better for the state overall.
Yes, it will. It certainly will, sir.
Senator Winters?
I just wanted, if I get this correctly, that it's a quarter of a million for what you're talking, every 6 months? Or what's the, if I talk in terms of biennial, what's the lease amount?
Mr. Chair,
is it a million?
Senator Winters, yes, about a million.
About a million, and it cost us $1.5 million every how many years?
4 years.
Every 4 years?
That's high.
Goodbye.
Senator Winters, that also includes upgrades. It'd be a, if we bought it in the normal course, we'd spend $1.5 million up front. Then we'd be paying also for upgrades along with it.
I guess where I'm kind of going is how much does it cost us to purchase plus the upgrades, and then look at then what does it cost us to lease.
And you'll dispose of your existing purchased hardware in this
right.
process.
Right.
Senator, we went over that. I just don't have those numbers with me, so let me bring that back tomorrow for you.
Thank you.
And then, Jim, if you'll refer us back to page 20 of the presentation at that time when you bring us that information.
Yes, I will. Thank you. I was going to say the other thing that our hardware software committee does when we purchase new personal computers, they also work with members of the agency that don't have new ones, that have older machines that could use some of the ones that were used by the other people. So we keep moving computers down in our agency depending on need. I don't need much of a computer. Myself, I just need word processing and some spreadsheets and all of that. So I'm still on Windows 95, I think, and it works just fine for me. But we sort of evaluate needs in the agency, and then we move the older machines down and we buy new ones so that everybody gets a little better machine.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Winters?
Is that you move them down with inside of Department of Revenue, and then after that you give them to... I'm still back a long time ago. Surplus and debts. I will forget. In Department of Administrative Services.
Mr. Chair, Senator Werners, I believe that's what happens with the really old ones that don't work for us anymore.
Whatever happened to the concept of the of common silos? Is this? I recognize that Department of Transportation and the Department of Revenue and Department of Human Services each wants individual pieces of machines. That isn't discussed when you get ready to lease, purchase another AS-400?
Okay, I'll take that. Mr. Chair, we have a statewide group, a statewide information technology council that is talking about those issues now. How do we most efficiently, across state government as an enterprise, acquire and use technology, particularly hardware? And for those agencies that use very similar machines, there's already quite a bit of discussion going on about trying to consolidate and co-locate and consolidate data centers where that makes economic sense and operational sense. There are four or five agencies in state government that use an AS-400.
Who are
the courts? I know the courts use AS-400. I believe Department of Corrections does. We do, and that's where my knowledge base stops. But I remember my computer services manager saying that there were four or five. And we've started to communicate with those folks through a council that was the statewide internet. I'm trying really hard not to use acronyms, Mr. Chair. The Statewide Information Technology Executive Council created a Chief Information Officer Council as a advisory, you know, technically proficient group. And on that council are all the big agencies that use technology. So all the agencies that use AS-400 now are in a group together and talking. And that group is now exploring how to assess the feasibility in terms of cost effectiveness and being sure that everybody gets their technology needs met of doing doing consolidated or co-located data centers and running each other's programs. So you'll see over time more of a movement toward an enterprise-based decision-making approach.
So if I hear you correctly, then in addition to the ODOT and Department of Human Services separate machinery and silos, not only does the Department of Revenue, is it a separate AS400 user, but also the Department of Corrections and the state court systems have their own AS400, separate silos entirely. And so when I went over and looked at Jim Mazziotti's hardware a few years ago, he identified a silo for the Department of Revenue and one for the Department of Transportation, one for Department of Human Services. And from what I hear, now courts and corrections have their own systems that we're actually moving to the point of more and more decentralization of information technology, it sounds like to me.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think what's happened is the decentralization had happened because, as you know, in our budget process, we all come to you individually as agencies. There's not a collective process where agencies can partner and come to the legislature. And I think maybe our cigarette task force is one of the first of those kinds of things. But the agencies have grown up over time with independent assignments of duties, independent development of systems, independent acquisition of technology resources. And so we have the silos. What we're trying to do now is we're trying to bring together the users and start doing some consolidation where that makes sense. So you've got conversations going on between Department of Transportation, Department of Human Services, and Department of Administrative Services about co-locating and consolidating mainframes because they use the same kind of mainframe computers.
Are they AS400s?
No, they're not AS400s. They're a different kind of mainframe. The department will be talking with other technology shops around state government that use the AS400 about, is there any possibility that can we work together so that we're more efficiently buying and using resource? Quite frankly, Mr. Chair, we use all the resource we've got. We don't have extra capacity on our own 400 for the data that we have to process and the work that we have to do, and I would guess if you talk to the other agencies that are heavy users, they'll say the same thing. But as the vendors create machines that have greater and greater capacity, and as we figure out how to be more efficient in how much space we need on those things, then that potential for that consolidation and co-location exists. We are also working with Transportation, Human Services, and DAS. Oops, there's my first one. the backup site and hot site.
The warm site that is in our budget notes.
To develop a set of needs and standards to go out and jointly contract for resource for backup in the case of a failure of major systems in state government. So the consolidation and collaboration work has begun. It takes time to move from investment you've already got in technology that you're working where the work was developed separately to start to march together and not just, you know, throw away investment that still has value. But the group is to develop the enterprise-wide strategy and standards and direction so that we can move in that way in a financially responsible way.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator.
You asked a question about the silos, and, you know, my mind went back to when I left state government in 81. And if I understood then in 81, which was not Department of Administrative Services, but Executive Department. Actually, part of the conversation that we're having now was a conversation that we had then, that there was to be a greater coordination and collaboration to make sure that we were having systems that were working together.
So co-locate.
So co-locate and all of that. Mm-hmm. And that was 20 plus years ago. And so when you, my mind sprang backward when you asked that question, because 21 years later, we're still talking about co-location.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, don't forget that as agencies have been consolidated into departments, and you remember in the early 80s, the Department of Human Services as a department didn't exist. There was the Department of Public Welfare. There was a Department of Children's Service. You know, there were a whole bunch of separate departments that provided, and those have all been brought together, and they are using now common technology. So there has been some consolidation that has taken place as we've had organizational consolidation. The other thing that's happened in the last decade is the capacity of technology and the kinds of activity that you can use technology for have changed dramatically. And so those old mainframe systems that many agencies still rely on for core bread and butter functions are still kind of cranking out the work. And now the challenge is to figure out how do we use new technology to do that more efficiently and more flexibly so that we can take advantage of what we've got together and do it more efficiently. So the reason I know is I'm chairing the statewide group right now. And we are, but it is challenging when we have all the systems that are in place, whether it's our statutory mandate, they're given to us separately, our budgets are given to us separately, our you know, everything's been separate for decades, and we're now trying to create an enterprise understanding of how state government works. So you should be hearing back from Department of Administrative Services and the Information Resources Management Division about some of those things that are going on. It's something that's very, very important to me, and I'm devoting my time also to that statewide effort.
Well, I think it's critical because, Mr. Chair, I think it's critical that we can't continue to talk about all these individual silos. And I can appreciate that the department status, but even then, if you had adult and family service and all those, you still had the central umbrella that was there, responsible for bringing those entities together. And I guess I think it's well beyond time to where state government begins to look at how you're going to come up with systems that are not separate and it not only costs us more, but I think the ability to talk to each other has to be there. Just my little 20 years later comment.
Thank you, Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm well beyond my area of expertise here, but in a former session, several former sessions, I spent a lot of time on the Transportation Committee. And every time we modified the slightest law regarding registration or titling process, it came with fiscals to actually modify the IT system for the agency. Are you one of the agencies that's still on a system that's as old as like the system? Of course, DMV has a history here, but as old as the system that DHR has or the Department of Motor Vehicles has? I mean, what program is your system? Is it still in COBOL?
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, the answer depends on what you mean by system. Our hardware configuration, which Jim described to you, that's the schematic is on page 20, relies on hardware that we continually upgrade because the operating systems for that hardware are upgraded. The applications that we have developed and that we use, that we run on this hardware, are of varying ages. The oldest ones we have, I think, are related to our personal income tax. We have a personal income tax processing system that we use to process all the returns that come in. And we also have a name and address database that is used in connection with the personal income tax system. And those are, I think, from like 1993. The applications were developed in 1993. So we need to rewrite those systems. And as Jim talks to you about the plans that we have going forward, you'll see those rewrites in our plan. Our corporate return, or our corporate automated tracking system, is relatively new and was just completed when I started in 1997 at the department. We've got our integrated tax accounting system has been around for a long time. We've done modifications of small pieces of it over time. Before very much longer, we're going to need to rewrite that. But the applications that we use are applications that are of varying ages. I couldn't tell you now. I know we use a special programming tool that's called Cool2E. And Jack, is the machine in COBOL itself?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Source code is COBOL.
So the source code is COBOL, but the programming tool that we use doesn't require our programmers to actually write in COBOL. It's a much more efficient programming tool.
Can I ask, Mr. Chairman, a hypothetical question?
Because I won't use the acronym, but I'll use the former agency.
I think COBOL is an acronym.
Probably is.
I would have lied. In the former Adult and Family Services, if you went in and saw an average worker and saw them, an average caseworker, whatever their current classification is, and saw them on their system actually trying to enter a data with a client there, my understanding is it's a relatively cumbersome system where the PC in front of you may be very much modern technology, but the system it's connecting into is really not. And where data entry is a problem, actually, for workers in terms of, you know, the correcting the system. I'd actually like to go back again and see this and see if it's improved over the last 10 years. But for your individual, I guess you would have people that would be in a category of like revenue agents. The systems they use, how user-friendly are they? I mean, in terms of, are they able to pull up data on a real-time basis? Is it what we might find comparable in the business world, actually?
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin. For some of the applications that our people use, they get a green screen, which is actually black with green letters on it. And that's the older systems. They are not connected to a graphical user interface that allows them to use drop-down menus and things like you would see in the off-the-shelf applications that we use like for word processing and for spreadsheets and for our calendaring system. And that's the integrated tax accounting system, which needs to be rewritten. We have continued to upgrade that application in ways that our staff tells us will make them more efficient. And when you go back and look at the chart that Jim discussed with you on page 17, and you see in the 2000 to 2001 time block, you see the ITA. The last time we did significant work, ITA actually first was brought up. The Integrated Tax Accounting System was first brought up in 93-94. And we had a strategy of trying to move all of our systems onto our AS400 and to do them in a year 2000 compliant way. So we put all of our energy and our programming resource into making sure all of our systems were migrated and were year 2000 compliant. Once we finished that, we had a backlog of fixes to the integrated tax accounting system that the staff had identified that would make them more productive and more efficient. And there were like 100 of them. And during the 2000-2001 time frame, we put a team on doing those fixes. And they did, and the productivity now has started to go up again. So it is not something that is a fixed, static application. It is always being maintained and upgraded. But the base application is going to need to be rewritten, and there's going to be a big jump in productivity when we can rewrite the application and make it useful in a way that most people are used to interacting with computers, which is the graphical user interface.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, the thing that, as a layperson and with no special expertise in this, I guess the comment that you often get is what the layperson's experience is now in the outside world. I've ordered systems recently through one of the major computer manufacturers, and go online, and I can tell when the system has been released from the shipper, who it's with, what the potential delivery date is on it, who the delivery agent will be, you know, and this is in a matter of fractions of a second. And I don't know if that, I think that's a comparison you often will get with the public or with members of the legislature also. Not that many members have any great expertise in the area, it's just that it's just their experience currently with how things, capabilities that seem to exist elsewhere.
Mr. Chair, if I could just continue this line with Senator Devlin. Not all of our applications that our employees use are the older green screen. We have a number of newer applications that have been developed that are located on the servers. If you go back to page 20, that's the center ring. We have, in fact, a brand new application for our personal income tax auditors that has just been released to them for use, that is in modern programming language, and it feels more like when you go on the internet. And our corporation system also is a more modern system. So we have a mix of new and old. The data that they use is common data, the information that comes in on returns. But as we develop new applications that help our people be more efficient, we are using new technology and new kinds of applications. But we do have a mix.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Winters.
I would think that would be common among most agencies, because you still have the old while you're trying to integrate the new. And I know it's true in human services, and probably even more so because their old frame is a lot older and they haven't been able to do a lot more new applications. And last session, when we allotted some dollars for them to try to do some upgrades, we took it away. So, I mean, that's also another piece of this, because, you know, when we looked at the ability to try to get them to integrate all of their intake, which required some IT dollars in order to do that, and we took a large piece of that money away. So they're not able to get that done. So just had to say that, too, since it's my agency.
Mr. Chair, how much time do you have remaining this morning?
I beg your pardon?
How much time do we have remaining this morning so that we can be sure that we come to a comfortable breaking point?
Sure is a good comfortable breaking point. We can be anywhere from 15 to about 25 minutes.
Well, where we had thought we would break would be right after this income tax technology plan information that Jim's going to talk about, and then tomorrow we would start.
Why don't we do that then? Let's go ahead and wrap with the 2003-2005 income tax information technology plan. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On pages 22 and 23, we've listed a number of the projects for information technology that we're looking at or planning to complete. I'll just cover a couple of them. Let me jump to what we've been talking about. We have a project going now on our big personal income tax system that Elizabeth was referring to, both to rewrite the processing system and the name and address portion of that system. In fact, when we started talking to Multnomah County about administering theirs, this ended up being a key piece for us, because it would require writing a system for them. And the more we looked at it, we realized we'd have to pull our key people, our developers and people off of our system,
to develop one for them that would work, because they had such a short timeline, and it would have caused us to slow down this and lose productivity from it. So we have a team working on that, and we expect once it's implemented, we have it settled down, it's going to give us another productivity increase for our income tax system, because it will deliver better tools to our people that are working the system. Another thing is the first bullet there, credit card payment option for taxpayers, is a continuation of projects as we've evolved from providing electronic filing of returns to taxpayers, electronic payments coming in. We currently have allowed taxpayers to use credit cards for delinquent debt, and now we are working, this project will allow people to use credit card payments actually with their current return. So if you file your return and want to use a credit card, you can do that instead of cash. So this will continue that. We found that those projects are a win-win. They'll make it easier for taxpayers, either in filing or paying, and it also makes our systems more efficient. The electronic is just better. And we will get into that a little when we get into the income tax system and actually our processing costs. The last thing I'd mention is the last bullet there on page 23. Because we have to protect confidential information, we always have to be careful about electronic transmission of that information. We'll work with taxpayers, and they'll want us to communicate information back and forth with them. Up until recently, before this project was proposed, we aren't able to, for instance, if we're dealing with a large industrial taxpayer, communicate information back and forth electronically without a waiver from them. This system will allow us to put in encryption that will make that easy, so that we don't have to be going through a cumbersome process. I'll stop at that point, Mr. Chair. It was just a couple highlights.
Thank you very much, Jim. Jim, I have a bill in over in, it's over in business, I'm not sure, that would have, or that requests that the department start to gather school district information on returns beginning January 1st, 2004, adding a three-digit field. I think the department wrote its own fiscal on that, indicating about a $1.5 million fiscal. That can't be right, but that'd be 1% of your total budget to gather a three-digit field on tax returns. But do you know anything about that?
Mr. Chair, I haven't seen the fiscal. I was talking to someone, and the cost, whatever the cost was, it was related to data entry.
Okay.
I haven't seen the number.
So the collection of beginning in, with the rewrite of the 2003 tax returns, the gathering of that information and beginning in processing season in January of 2004, to add a three-digit field of collected information would be about 1% of your total operating budget.
But Mr. Chair, can we bring that back tomorrow?
Yeah, can check we, on that can we just look at that? I would appreciate it. With that, are there any further questions that go through the information presented today? If not, we'll pick up on page 25 tomorrow as we get ready to come back together.
Thank
with
you.
That, we'll go ahead.
Thank you.
Until tomorrow. Thank you for that. Elizabeth, hope you get your voice.